Welcome to Tell Me About It on WUFT 89.1 and 90.1. I'm Sue Wagner here today with one of our wonderful journalists on staff at WUFT in the Innovation News Center. She's with the Report for America core member, Rose Schnabel, and an acclaimed artist, Margaret Ross Tolbert. And she has been in the Gainesville area for a very long time, and she features springs in her paintings. And right now, Ocklawaha River, which is easy for everyone else to say, is experiencing a drawdown where the Rodman Dam is. And when it goes down, what appears is some beautiful springs. And artists love to capture this moment because it only happens about every 5 years. Is that correct?
The last one was 6 years ago.
And it's just an incredible occurrence. And Rose was able to go along with Margaret to see this phenomena. And Margaret's been painting it, and she's got an exhibit that's going to be in the Orlando airport. So you two, tell us what you did.
I was really excited to join Margaret, to join Matt Keen and Karen Chadwick out on the Ocklawaha because I had heard about it since I moved to Florida. It was one of the first things that people told me was that there's a river that looks like this part of the time and looks totally different the rest of the time. So as soon as there was a drawdown, I knew that I had to get out there, and all three of them were really willing to take me along. And I think the coolest part was seeing each of their artistic processes, because Margaret focuses on painting, Matt focuses on photography, Karen does sculpture and also painting. And everybody saw the river differently, which I think was really interesting.
And when did this happen? Just recently?
It was mid-December, yeah.
So does it take a long time for the river to go down?
It takes a couple weeks, and then it will be down until mid-March, and then supposedly it goes back up again, and that takes a few weeks to fill back up.
So this is because of the Rodman Dam. This is why the change in the river occurs.
They do it every few years, as we mentioned, to expose vegetation so that it can die and create more habitat for fish when the water comes back up.
So right now it's kind of used as a reservoir for fishing primarily. But before that, before the dam, it was kind of a thriving ecosystem. Is this correct?
Yes. Yeah, it was a famous river, especially in the 19th century when tourism began in Florida. People from all over the world came and visited the sweetest water on earth, as Sidney Lanier said, and it was just so many species of fish and manatee and different creatures used it as a migratory route necessary for reproduction and feeding, and tourists from all over the world came. People were sustenance fishing there.
And it's fed by springs, is that correct?
It is, yeah. There are about 20 lost springs, as many people refer to them now, that once, well, they still feed the river, but they're covered under darker waters when the drawdown isn't happening.
So has it been a thriving location for fishermen to come, or is it just kind of just not really happening down there?
It's happening. I'll say that. I have been out there a couple of times for some previous reporting. Last year, when Governor Ron DeSantis vetoed $6.25 million that was allocated to start the process of removing the dam, I went out to get some just local reactions to it. And there were quite a few people casting off. I would say maybe 10 to 15 anglers who had come there a lot. And I asked them why they came. And for a lot of the people, it was a generational thing. They were like, oh, I've been coming here with my dad, and I remember being a kid. And they appreciate how it has accessibility. It's easy to pull off onto and just cast off but then it's also wheelchair accessible, which they appreciate.
So the dam was created to kind of form a cross Florida barge canal that I think never actually ever happened.
I think that the dam, Matt explained it, that the dam was formed to make the river back up for the canal, but also to create a big space for the barges to turn around. So in that large reservoir area. So, and none of that is used, needed. There's just all this. I remember when I was in high school, there was a movie about this, Boondoggle. And it's like, they were talking about, and all these millions of dollars paid for these picnic tables on these sites overlooking this defunct, you know, barge canal. It was sort of a environmental satire, and here it still is.
Well, I think since then there's been some continuous efforts to try and remove the dam or remove the infrastructure that's there. Is that correct, Rose?
Absolutely, yeah. Really, since the beginning, advocates have been pushing to remove the dam. in order to restore river health and spring health and river connectivity. So we can think of the Ocklawaha River as, we were saying earlier, kind of like a sash that cuts across Florida, starting in the Green Swamp and then going all the way out to...
And where is the Green Swamp?
The Green Swamp is near Tampa.
Okay.
And so this Ocklawaha River connects Silver Springs and the Silver River to the St. John's River. And so there are a lot of water quality issues in the St. John's, algae blooms, everything like that happening. And Lisa Rinneman, St. John's Riverkeeper, is a strong advocate for the fact that if the Florida Department of Environmental Protection were to remove the dam, then the increase in flow that would come to the St. John's would help with some of those water quality issues.
So it flows into the St. John's?
Yes, it's the leading tributary of the St. John's. And so the state mandated a program in 95 that it would be partial restoration. So that means the river would be free-flowing, but they don't have to remove all the giant concrete bulwarks or things like that. So some of that would be, but the essential is to restore the free-flowing river. And it would be a gradual process. So then you would avoid some problems maybe with flooding if the dam failed.
Would they, there's a lot of businesses there now, I guess, that appeal to the fishermen. If we made it more of a recreational thing, would that still be viable?
That's what legislators in the current legislative session are trying to do. There's an act introduced called Northeast Florida Rivers, Springs, and Community Investment Act, and it focuses heavily on that financial piece of trying to build more of a recreational industry around the river once it is restored.
It's kind of like the original Florida, though, the beauty of that area.
It is. And there's a lot of local shore sustenance fishing, shore fishing that can't happen if the river's high. So those people are kind of shut out. Generally at Rodman, it's people with boats unless they're on the dam. And so I think it could be more inclusive that way. They're talking about not taking the entire dam out, just breaching a part of it. And then some of those, you could still do a lot of that fishing.
So kind of like a compromise, I guess, between the two.
I think you could say that, yeah. Or maybe changing people's perceptions of what would happen once the dam's removed, because there's a lot of concerns about flooding if the dam were to be breached, or about a loss of fish habitat. And so scientific studies have tried to make the case that, hey, there still will be fish afterwards, and it may look different than it does now, but it's still going to be a healthier ecosystem than the one that's currently in place.
Before the dam, was it the Lost Springs were always there? You didn't know it until the water was changed?
Before the dam, they were always there. They were always obvious. Now it's been drawn down 11 feet, so you can see them. But in fact, it was slightly lower, and there were more of these springs visible. And then before the dam, migratory species such as striped bass that require the length of the river to swim and spawn were there. Now they're not any. They're just hybrids from the Welaka fishery. So a lot of things could return. A lot of migratory species that use that passage as their wildlife corridor could return if the river were free-flowing.
Well, it was there before, so obviously if it goes back, it probably will maintain itself. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this drawdown and the artwork and the people that are involved, and a boat captain as well that takes people out of the river. So we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Tell Me About It on WUFT 89.1 and 90.1. I'm here today with Rose Schnabel. She is our Report for America Corps member and an environmental and agricultural reporter in the Innovation News Center here at the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications, and a University of Florida alumni and stellar artist, well acclaimed with all of her Springs paintings, Margaret Ross Tolbert. And both of them have joined together to kind of chronicle the art and the history of the Ocklawaha River. And recently, the river was drawn down, and realistically, the springs came back that have always been there, but people can enjoy them now. And you were talking a little bit about art being inclusive and how everybody's kind of jumping on the bandwagon this time because they really enjoy this area. They think it's gorgeous, and they'd like to maintain and improve it. So tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, I was going to say the reason why maybe this year feels like there's so much more momentum because the dam removal advocates have always said this could be the year. But given the veto of last year's funding that was going to be allocated to start the process of removal, the current legislative session overlapping with a drawdown, I think that it's the idea of a free-flowing river is very much in the public mind or consciousness right now. And a lot of that is driven by artists. It's Margaret Ross Tolbert. It's Matt Keen. It's a bunch of amateur artists that I had the chance to go out with onto the Silver River. And I think that natural Florida beauty has always been a really attractive subject for a lot of artists. And something special about the Ocklawaha is that it doesn't always look like that. And so maybe something about its ephemerality is also attractive to artists. I don't know, Margaret. Is that how you feel?
I think something about the drawdown, too, is totally miraculous, because the minute the water goes down, those slopes are just crowded with new green growth, even in the middle of winter. And it's just all this outbreak of this outpouring of energy and growth. And it's very touching. It's very kind of poignant. And you see, and then you see the springs revealed, and you see all these fish suddenly. It's almost like you're witnessing creation over and over. And somehow these springs, lost springs, still come back, which is kind of amazing that they're under all this brown water, but they can come back. And I think people can join in that reveal and that process, and it's with this drawdown, and they are so excited about it. It's also a question of access, because it's hard to find the springs sometimes, and it's hard to, you know, get there. Where do you go, or where do you put in? And so getting that word out, and I know they've sponsored some boat trips for artists to come. You know, artists don't have boats lots of times, maybe some kayaks, so they can go and look at these places and talk to locals and get a sense of what it's like.
Saw the article that Rose put on WUFT.org, and it shows some pictures, and it shows one of the boat captains driving, I guess, down the river, and people with their sketch pads. Mm-hmm. So it seems like this was a popular attraction to kind of chronicle this current event.
A lot of people have been going out, whether on their own accord or as a part of these organized trips. I went out with Captain Karen Chadwick twice, once with Margaret, and then also once with the group Florida Defenders of the Environment, which was a nonprofit founded by Marjorie Harris Carr, who was one of the strongest opponents to the Cross Florida Barge Canal. And they specifically wanted to give artists the opportunity to see the river. And in this case, we were going to go to the Ocklawaha, but it was even too low to put in there. And so we went to the Silver River because they're connected. And I think that the artists, a lot of them had never known or hadn't heard about the debate surrounding the Rodman Reservoir. But in seeing the beauty of the Silver River, they kind of said, oh, we need to make people care about this.
Yeah, and the Silver River is absolutely gorgeous. I've been down there in Ocala where I've seen
and
it.
And think of all that. All the beautiful submerged aquatic vegetation there that's as artists, we're aware of these things that are sort of denied all those species that could come through and feast on it and be sustained by it. And it's all that sort of sense of plenitude of beauty and of richness that almost goes with the process of creativity, too.
That's neat. So this is this is going to be ongoing, you said, until March. So do you have additional plans to go down there and check out more things and find out more, consider more art, I guess, for your future exhibits?
Oh, yeah. I think we need to do some more evening paddles and see that world change at different times of day. And I'm taking some canvases out this week on a kayak to work. And I think a lot more people will come once they figure out how to get there, too.
You can paint while you're in a kayak?
Yes.
That
it's
is
like
amazing.
A floating studio.
That is pretty cool. But you're not doing watercolor.
You can draw. I do oils, but you can draw underwater if you have the right materials. And you can. That's one of the magical things about the Ocklawaha is all these. I'm sure they remember me, but all these fish and all these different species and just tons of different kinds of fish, and we've seen these giant tadpoles, and it's like a wonderland.
And you mentioned that you're going to have another exhibit or a new exhibit in the Orlando International Airport. Is that going to feature some of these paintings?
Actually, it's a commissioned piece, so they're buying it. So one of the 30-foot paintings, they liked the studies for Cannon Springs on the Ocklawa. So that's what it'll be.
Is that one of the Lost Springs?
Yes. Okay. It's one of the most charming and beguiling of the Lost Springs. It's like a blue fountain underwater. Yeah.
Can you see it bubbling up?
Oh, yes. It's just like, I think someone told me the reason it's called Cannon is because it's these jets. And it's like the biggest little spring in the world. These jets of silt flying up in the air and fish swimming in and out of it. And it's just so active. It's just.
It really is.
So that's going to be featured in the painting?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
So where is this artwork going to be in the airport?
So it'll be at the new Terminal C. And when you come down the long length of that terminal, and it's all skylight, so it's all natural light. And when you come down there and you're going up the steps, you see the original installation of over 500 small canvases that were mostly done on site at different springs in the area. And they're all put together to kind of make a large spring-like shape that you pass through, like a water line. And then when you get to the top floor, it's called the sixth floor, you'll see these two 30-foot paintings above. And we also have a 10-foot spring shed map that talks to people about what water is traveling under their feet and when they're in the airport and where does it go, and the whole story of the aquifer.
That's interesting, yeah.
So I worked on with the Water Institute on that and with the same graphic designer that did the 2011 one. So now we're doing 2025 version.
Has it changed a lot in that time frame?
It's interesting. It looks like it's changed a lot, like they've shrunk. But they explained to me, too, that there's a different way of modeling because it's kind of hard to tell about where is the water under our feet and which spring does it go to. So there are different methods, and now they're trying another one, and the Water Institute is inventing a third method. So that's a challenge for the graphic artist to express this range, you know, that's partly due to our water uses, but partly due to just different ways of portraying it and getting a precise, sort of more precise idea. So it's like fuzzy sets, I think, about spring sheds.
That's great. Well, this is the partnership that kind of started with the Ocklawaha River, but I'm sure you'll be joining in together on other various art. And,
yes.
Of course, nature's got to be involved, too. That's a Rose is really excellent in her writing, especially capturing the essence of what's going on and the comments from people. It kind of really draws you in. It's kind of like word pictures. It's really amazing.
I think that's an art, too. And I think that is, however scientific it is, still it's an art of making something that's so appealing and that is also so inclusive, much like these springs we want to protect. It's just like everyone is a part of it. It's not like you have to defend your point of view, and you kind of enter a little world with her writing. It's really well done.
That's great. Well, thank you. We're going to link on our podcast page to Rose's article about the Ocklawaha and also to Margaret Tolbert's site so you can see her work on all the different springs. So, Margaret, Rose, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
That was Report for America Corps member Rose Schnabel and artist Margaret Ross Tolbert on today's episode of Tell Me About It. To listen to previous episodes of the show, go online at wuft.org/tellmeaboutit or on the WUFT media app. I'm Sue Wagner on Tell Me About It on WUFT.